Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to After Things. I'm Andrew Main, joined by my co-host, Justin Robert Young, and my other co-host, Bryce Castillo.
Yeah, gentlemen. Yo.
Bryce is always a part of this, and finally, now that we got rid of Brian, Bryce can be the real important part that he's always meant to be.
Get rid of that guy.
I know. Tell you what, a birthday present for Bryce, Brian GTFO'd.
Yeah,
what a birthday present for the real star power.
Gentlemen, one of the things we were just talking about right before in the pre-show was Patreon has done they've done a redesign. They've stepped up their game. It looks a lot more trust us kind of thing, because, you know, there is, was pointed out, you know, they're becoming bigger, and for many people they are a primary source of income, and so they're big into payments handling, et cetera, and so they're trying to look a little more responsible and stuff, and not just this, hey, wouldn't it be cool if your friends could support you, and we'll facilitate that. It is an amazing, fascinating model, and one that I think is only going to grow and grow and grow, and I think it could potentially even surpass Kickstarter.
Oh, I think without a doubt, you were... You know, Patreon running at full strength should always be able to overtake Kickstarter, just because all you got to do is set something up once and it's there forever. And each time you want to set something else up, it's another recurrent revenue source. You know, what Patreon has done, which is the most important thing, is create themselves as a credible, trusted brand for people to give their money without thinking, which is not as easy as it sounds, despite the fact that on the internet it's very, you know, easy to do it. But if you look at the brands, the emergent brands in which we like trust our money with, there's really not that many of them that are our household names. And mm-hmm. you need that to be the case if it's Patreon, because now Patreon is just the shorthand of, oh, support creators, as opposed to a shady site that I have to give my credit card.
Right. Or it would have been like a PayPal. PayPal has always had a subscribe option for people to give you recurring payments for you to collect recurring things. But the mixture of payment processing for recurring billings and tools to tie that to creation is something I think people have, larger companies have been rolling out on their own for so long, and by Patreon opening it up, you know, to whatever fraction of the horsepower that is versus your own rolled system, it's huge, and it's on this scale the first thing for people who are looking for this sort of support.
Well, so much of it comes into the context in which we see things. Now, you know, 10 years ago, you could pitch the idea of, imagine, you know, 10 years ago, if you're like, hey, imagine, you know, if I wanted to do a project and then I could do a thing where I could tell people like, hey, if I get this much money supporting it, I'll go ahead and I'll go do it. And you could pitch that and people would have been like, why don't you just create a page and just have people say they're agree to pledge to be able to do it if you do it. Like, well, then I got to collect and I got to do that. And you'd be like, well, you know, maybe there's a business there. Like, I don't know. But once you put in the context of Kickstarter, you're like, oh, I get this. Now I understand what this does.
Yeah. And it's not a foreign idea. It's something that it only used to be for, you know, large companies to make. You know, Rooster Teeth rolls out their own sort of premium service. Giant Bomb has a premium service. You know, I mean, that's what it is it's like kind of democratizing a premium access to content in a way that YouTube has very much dropped the ball on in opening up those features.
Yeah, certainly there have been subscription services for a long time, you know, but I guess that the context of this is sort of the idea is we're going to identify the relationship, but a lot of them are very impersonal. A lot of them, you know, we're going to identify the relationship that if you're a podcaster or you know, YouTuber, you have a relationship with your audience and you don't think of yourself primarily as a content provider. You think of a person doing something kind of cool that might be this, it might be that. Other services are problem with other services too is they don't have the fulfillment thing necessarily tied into it. You can do an Amazon or you can do a PayPal reoccurring subscription. If you don't deliver, keeps going through. Mm-hmm. And Patreon is saying, hey, yeah, no, here's the thing. If you don't deliver, it doesn't go through unless you're doing a monthly sort of thing. And that's so, you know, that's where Kickstarter's like, yeah, no, we're going to be the intermediary. If it clicks over to here, then we'll do that. But then the problem Kickstarter had is, well, they didn't fulfill. And Kickstarter's like, well, that's technically not what our obligation is. And it's like, well, that's why I thought I was going to you. Mm-hmm. And that's been causing problems because, you know, it's not their, they can't make sure they're going to fulfill on it. And they're trying to really hard on Kickstarter. They're spending a lot of effort into developing tools to help people deliver, to show people how to follow through, to help them build more realistic expectations, because that's the biggest thing impacting them.
Yeah.
For Patreon, imagine back in the day when we had, you know, Whedon was doing Dr. Evil. You know, you could say, you know, you could do the Kickstarter model. We make, what's that?
Dr. Horrible.
Yeah, Dr. Horrible, not, sorry. Not the Mike Myers. I knew I was getting some of that wrong. it was, you could go in and you could do the Kickstarter model for that. But if you're like, oh, let's keep the show continuously going instead of having to do that fundraise every year, 18 months, and then the time to go from there, you have this enthusiasm that says, all right, you know, we need to do an upfront or we got this ongoing thing. As long as you keep doing this, we will keep doing episodes. And if we get a certain point, we can keep this going for a certain distance out. It might be hard with something as big as episodic television, but it's not impossible because that's kind of how things sort of work to a degree already.
So the other thing that I think is very important about Patreon is that it is not tied to a platform. Mm-hmm. That, you know, there was an undercurrent of it, I think, even when, you know, Conti as a YouTube creator that had done very well with Pomplamoose understood, like, you know, I mean, I remember having conversations with people that worked at Google and YouTube specifically, where they were explaining the grand vision of just do content. We'll figure out the rest. We're going to sell the best ads. We're going to put them on there. You're going to get the number one, you know, the amount of money that you can possibly get. We're revolutionizing this. We provide the hosting. We provide your money. Like, this is it. YouTube, baby. And eventually, like all best laid plans, you know, you could kind of see the cracks in that. The money wasn't quite what it was, and it was often variable. You couldn't really count on it, and there really weren't a lot of metrics that showed you exactly what something would do. You were kind of always just sort of throwing your project out in there into the ether and hoping that this time it would come back. And also, you know, then YouTube was like, yeah, well, also you can't sell as many ads as you might want if you want to get our premium stuff. And, you know, you just eventually started to see where that was kind of not quite the bargain that they initially offered you. Same thing with Twitch. You know, Twitch, I think, has right now a better monetization model for live streaming specifically than YouTube has. But ultimately, I think there is a real buyer beware with anybody who wants to base your entire way that you make money if you put it in the hands of a platform. And Patreon offers you that off-island experience where now all of a sudden we cannot be on Twitch tomorrow. We could be on a new thing that benefits us. We could be on something else. We could do, hell, we were homerolled forever, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and we monetize on Patreon. That's huge. It's huge for the future of your show, and it's huge for being able to actually make a living on it.
You know, and the problem with, I think, YouTube Red and some of those other systems is that they're recreating the problem of cable was, and, you know, that we deal with in cable, where there's a huge inefficiency. You're paying $100 for a package and you only want a few things. Netflix works great because Netflix says, you know, at $9 a month, we think we can create, and if we have enough people, you know, the first million, the second million people watching Stranger Things doesn't cost us any more than the first million other than bandwidth, but production cost, the show doesn't get more expensive if there's 2 million people watching it versus 1 million. So they know that they can create a finite amount of product and they can increase their customer base to a certain limit and then spend a certain amount. The problem with these other platforms is they're, you know, when you're in YouTube Red is, yeah, you're going to get a percentage of something based upon some sort of metric or whatever, but you're fighting over a smaller percentage of what somebody's paying per month, where the focus, I think you're better off, like case of Justin, is you're better off focusing like, hey, you know, I want to be the primary person to provide the content to my audience to these platforms. And so rather than say, hey, you got to go to YouTube Red to get me, just support me and I'll keep doing it, because, you know, rather than, you know, he'll make more money because somebody loves him and wants to get access to him than he would if somebody loves him and says, well, I'll subscribe to YouTube Red just for Justin. Because, well, again, guess what? You're going to get a fraction of a tenth of a percent of that person subscribing to YouTube Red for you.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I mean,
and that's
there was an article today about Spotify where, you know, the Spotify user base has exploded, but their revenue, they're losing more money than ever because they're still not making money on these people. And, mm-hmm. it's the Spotify revenue system is the exact same that it is on YouTube Red, is it's plays per this entire pool of revenue. And at some point that's a very small, the fractions of cents that you can receive on Spotify will astound you.
Yeah. And if I subscribe to Spotify because it's like, oh, Lorde's got a new album out. I'm like, you know what? You know, maybe I'll just go subscribe to Spotify and I pay, you know, whatever my $10, $15 a month for it is. She's not going to see that $15, even though she was the reason I did that. And it's, you know, the part of the problem we have is like, you know, once you, as people try to push somebody, you know, we've debated like, oh, should we sell Audible subscriptions or not? And the pro and con of it is it's like, well, you know, for what you're bringing to Audible, but, you know, what one is, our fans are probably heavily into Audible, whatever. You know, for us making that trade-off and pushing to that platform, they don't make that much. You know, it's like a one-time kind of thing. Yeah. Yet for an Audible, you know, new Audible subscriber, it's worth, you know, $150 gross to Audible or whatever. And you pushing those other platforms, it's like, yeah, I'll push people to the platform, and then they're going to watch other content on that platform, and I'm not going to make the lion's share of what I should versus if I did my own Patreon or something like it.
Yeah, I almost feel like YouTube was expecting more creators to push people to YouTube Red for that exact reason of like, hey, mm-hmm. if you get YouTube Red and you watch a lot of me, I'm going to see a lot of that. I'm going to see more shares of the revenue pot, where, you know, something like Twitch, which is a direct money sort of exchange.
Yeah.
You know where your stuff is going. You know it's going directly to this person. You know what percentage of it is going to that person.
Yeah.
And every month, you know that it's just that directness. That,
well, yeah, you know that in Patreon, you know you're creating your content for your Patreon supporters. Yeah. If you're on YouTube Red, you're still back in YouTube, and YouTube still has a problem. We talked about this for years since YouTube launched, you know, is that, you know, how is YouTube going to monetize? And the only answer was going to be advertising. And people are like, oh, we don't want to advertise on YouTube. Do you want to pay for it? No, then you're going to get advertising. But then they sort of reach this sort of ceiling limit to how many ads they can show you before you just say, I'm not even going to bother watching this. So that's, they came up the YouTube Red subscription model. Cause like, well, there's some people really want, they're, you know, they want to see PewDiePie. They want to see this sort of stuff. And it seemed like, oh, we'll be like a Netflix kind of thing. And I get pushed for YouTube Red all the time. Like, you know, to, you know, like, yeah, get this. And it's like, it's nothing I want, you know, it's nothing I want. And it's not that it's a, there isn't a place for that, but here's my theory. Here's my guess, my prediction. Google/YouTube is going to launch their own Patreon type system. What's that?
They did launch something similar like 2 years ago, right?
Yeah, they have a lot of these systems in place for buying content, premiuming things, but it's only for select
people. They get it wrong. They always miss the important part of it, though. You know, they always miss some part of it. And I'm like, yeah, they've tried different kind of like subscription things, but they haven't had. And I'm not saying it'll work, but I'm saying it's like the part is missing kind of thing. You know, it's like, oh, we're going to launch Google Plus. Okay, Facebook was based upon starting around the nucleus of communities of people who actually know each other, either from school or work. What's yours? People you know online. Well, great, that's everybody. So who's in my Google Plus? Everybody. I still get pushes from people in Google Plus I don't even like, not that I'm indifferent to, like, oh, so-and-so read this. I could give a damn. I could care less. It's become it went from a, oh, this would be cool, to like, oh, this is sort of useless, to like, oh, this is negative. This is a negative experience for me.
Yeah.
where, and I think that they're going to, not to say they'll do it right or get it right, but I'm sure, and again, man, do you know how many times Google tried video in selling video? Like, I remember I bought videos from the Google store that no longer work. They shut that down and they keep trying it. But as more people start going to Patreon, that's their turf.
So let me ask you guys some questions about Patreon, because what I mentioned before is that Patreon is coming of age. I think their redesign partly reflects that. I've had conversations with people there internally where they've talked about, you know, now it is easier to turn off what you're making, you know, because they realized that this was something that bigger players don't want you to see exactly what how much you're making, because sometimes it gets to a point where it becomes detrimental. They now have a more professional look to them. I think we've already seen a little bit of it, but now they're going to have to make some very interesting decisions on exactly what kind of content is going to be allowed on there. I think that we are not far away from people directly attacking, you know, on more controversial shows, people attacking Patreon for allowing them to be monetized, because this will be the most direct way that you can, you know, instead of going to an advertiser and saying, why is this advertiser doing this? You can go right to the heart of the matter and go after Patreon. And Patreon's going to have to make like decisions really hard, possibly unpopular decisions.
Sure. And I guess it may be my naivete, but a lot of times they'll be like, we'll have this problem. Like, yeah, but that's going to be such a minor. Yes. That'll be a question that people say because it's something to say or talk about, but it'll continue to get bigger and bigger and bigger. You know, if I believe what people said about the problems of PayPal, nobody would use PayPal. It wouldn't be the giant that it was. And I have problems with PayPal. There are frustrating things about PayPal, but it did what it did well enough, and it was the best solution. It was like, great, what am I going to use instead? You know, and it wasn't until we had a big change with things like Stripe and other things, which made it easier to create online payments. It was like, and I'd have people like, oh no, I don't use PayPal because, you know, they'll hold sellers' money over these issues. Like, yeah, they try to be very buyer proactive. But you talk to some people and you think, oh, that's all the noise, it's going to fail. You're like, no, it's, yeah, there are people who are very frustrated by that, but it still has so much utility to it. It still ends up succeeding.
Oh yeah. No, I mean, I guess I think that the thing that will be more of an issue for them is just their own success. The fact that they are becoming synonymous with how you can make money independently online. And since they are, you know, you got a big number there and you have, you know, have as many backers, even the ones that don't have their total money coming in, you can still fairly accurately extrapolate, you know, around what they're making. And so if you hate something or believe that something is awful, you can say, all right, well, let me attack that. But now I know that if that goes away, or if Patreon decides that this kind of thing we don't want to be a part of, now all of a sudden you know exactly how much, you know, you're taking off that table.
So I'm gonna tell you why I love Patreon, though. And I launched a couple months ago with my buddy Jordan Gold. We launched a little magic podcast called Magic Club, right? And it's a companion pod. We do a podcast. We talk about magic. Then we have a companion session called The Secret Session, where we do some really cool behind the scenes, learn some really cool slides. We spend a half hour, 45 minutes just showing different stuff and teaching, you know, Jordan teaching me or me showing something. We're bringing in people. We've had just great, you know, number of the guys consulting for David Blaine have been on there teaching stuff. And we've just been doing this in a very slow rollout. I don't talk about it a lot. I don't promote it on my Twitter because we're just sort of, we're building up, you know, content. We're building up, just finding our pace and doing this. And it's fun to do. We just do it because we talk a lot about magic and stuff. And so, you know, we're only making like, the Patreon's only like $66 or something right now per episode, which is actually great, because the funny thing is, I don't promote the YouTube stream or anything else on my Twitter. I have not turned that on yet because I'm still waiting to kind of get to where I think the show is still very much in beta for me. We have like maybe only 100 views per video. We only got about 100 views per video, but we're already at $66 per episode.
Yeah.
So you think about that, the ratio of viewers to monetization is insane. And not that that's going to scale like that, but that's what it means when you have like 100 people who really like something that you're doing, that, you know, we're able to get, you know, we're making 80 cents per view or something. Or, I mean, it's just amazing, you know, that you look at, like, that's the power of a devoted small audience that likes what you do. And that's why we're like trying to grow this out as a community. We're not trying to do like get everybody on YouTube to watch this sort of thing. We want to kind of just reach out magic hobbyists and sort of find people that way.
And that's a thing that is the big thing that Patreon for a long time was serving, where YouTube and Twitch until recently were not, of like opening up those revenue streams to smaller crowds, smaller groups, who have their own loyal, dedicated fans, but they're not, you know, big whales, right? Like, you don't have to be a YouTube partner to start making money on a small new channel. You don't need to be at a certain size for Twitch to get access to all their monetization stuff. Like, you, it's opening up the doors to everybody. And I think that's why it's been such a hit.
And we've had, I've had conversations with Jordan's girlfriend. She's super knowledgeable about like on digital marketing and YouTube optimization and stuff and working YouTubers and all that. And the thing we've said is like, here's the thing though. What we're trying to do is we're not trying to put this out there as a YouTube platform. Our goal is not to like, hey, we're going to find all these people on YouTube to watch us, which is what you want to do if you want to make your money through YouTube is what you do. It's like, no, our goal is to, we want our primary source of people to come from, you know, the magic community. And people are like, well, what would it matter if you just reached YouTubers first? It's because that'll shape the content. Mm-hmm. And if we're trying to do the mass appeal sort of content relates to magic, we're going to do what everybody else is doing, which is either exposure stuff or do a knockoff, not good version of Scam School. So, you know, where we want to go in depth, which means the average YouTube watcher is not going to get this or want to be part of it. But somebody who's active on magic message boards or places like that is going to be hyper into that. And we know there are hundreds of thousands of people like that. So we want to reach those 100,000 and not a billion people.
So, yeah. So like five or maybe 10 years from now, what does something like Patreon look like? Does Patreon get bought by somebody? Or does it just continue to be its own independent thing? We just saw with all this the redesign stuff that they were launching a partnership for live streaming with Crowdcast to you know, go into that area more. And it's, you know, the thing that Patreon right now doesn't have is hosting for stuff that isn't audio or images.
I think better tools for content creation is helpful. YouTube content creation tools still suck because YouTube realized we could have crap tools, but people will still keep creating and uploading. It was almost like it was a limiter. It was almost a way to say, let's stop people from putting up too much stuff in there. And so you still don't have, there's still not a good, you know, interface on YouTube just to do a regular podcast, record it to YouTube and edit it and have it work in a good way and not this. The way they have it is sucks. Mm-hmm. And we're so far beyond that technology now. Better tools for content creation would be great. Better ways to streamline it. And then you could take a bigger percentage, I think, would be helpful for that. Somebody, Mana says, you know, Amazon buys them. I don't see PayPal buying them, but Amazon buying them 100% think this would be a thing that could be a fit for Amazon. What I would like to see, and I think that there's another opportunity out there, is if you wanted to create a competitor to Patreon, if you wanted to create a way to solve a problem, the biggest problem with Patreon right now is if you're subscribing to multiple podcasts, and this is a perceptual point of view, at the end of the month or the start of the month, you get that, you know, $100 Patreon bill.
Yeah.
And you're like, you know,
$40
and less
a month
like,
for everything. Yeah. You start to question, like, you know, it's little bits here and there, but that's, you know, $30-$40 a month for very mild use.
That's why anybody who runs a Patreon knows that first of the month, like, you normally see a dip, and it's usually because everybody gets that bill and they're like, oh Jesus, I gotta trim my hedges.
And that's probably the toughest part of the Patreon experience as a supporter, is like having to decide, oh man, I love all of these things. Which one gets the axe?
So this is a little gray area, but the solution to that is either Patreon or somebody else says, and where Patreon works is they save on credit card transactions as they group them all together. And that's why you used to be able to do like 1 cent charges or whatever, because they figured, you know, which I thought that was a great idea, the one penny thing. I wish they'd bring that back, because that one penny is a great way for me to email and stay in contact with people and let them know that and get them to at least get into the system. And well, I think that was...
I think Patreon replaced that with the following system, where as long as you have public posts, you can still receive emails.
Yeah, it just doesn't. The problem is that they're no longer in the system with their credit card or all that. You know, it's harder to get them to the jump as to a subscriber level. You know,
possibly.
You know, and it's a way to say to dial back, like, hey, trouble, just dial back and keep in touch. And so that's the way I look at it. The other thing I was getting to though is that either Patreon or somebody else roll out a solution that says, hey, you're going to get billed individually. You're going to get, you know, your bill is going to say the Justin Robert Young podcast, you know, the Bryce Show, whatever, which if you see it for, you're getting a $6 bill, $6 a month for that, then you're going to feel a little bit, you know, like, okay, yeah, no, I like that. I like the show. And then you know when to time your content, whatever. So,
Yeah, I'll tell you what, I would almost wonder whether or not it's better to just rip the Band-Aid off all at once or do it slowly, you know, because if I got 40 statements about like the smaller numbers, whether or not I would think that was better or worse than just the one where I'm like, I mean, like I can rationalize it because I'm like, oh, look, I'm supporting other people. And, you know, this is a professional business relationship that I'm keeping everybody in my good graces because I want to support them and put my money where my mouth is if I'm asking people to support me. But I mean, even me, I look at that number and I'm like, oh, geez. All right. Let's see where we can save a little.
Well, in talking about Patreon, bundling up transactions, you know, they do it so that it's cheaper. But if suddenly everybody has their own statement I think it would behoove Patreon at some point to figure out a way to make it economical to have people have custom bill dates. And so if you don't, if you suddenly don't have everyone billing on the end of the last day of the month or the first day of the month, then you can spread out some of that shell shock across. But then that gets expensive because you're charging smaller amounts all throughout the month.
You know, there are systems in place like PayPal has adaptive payments, and they actually have a thing for micropayments for like things under $5 actually makes sense because then it's like the five cents plus five, like it's 5 cents plus I forget what the fee is, whatever. But like you can do dollar payments or whatever like that, and not have to do the 30 cents, you know, so there's a point threshold there. Manna says he thinks that PayPal is a potential buyer. I would say that yes, it would seem like they're a fit from point of view of they're into payments and stuff, but PayPal itself is a company in their acquisitions and stuff they've been doing is they, you know, they've acquired Braintree, something zero, whatever, and all that. They've acquired other companies that do really, really good at sort of payment processing, but Patreon is very much a social media thing too. You know, They're very much it's another component. Not to say that they couldn't do it or they wouldn't do it, but it's just been so outside of their wheelhouse of what they did. And, you know, the long history of PayPal, you know, going from individual to bought by eBay to spun out and all that is interesting. Now, PayPal's got a market cap of $63 billion, so they could certainly afford to do an acquisition. And it would be an interesting play to see they do it. But they buy those other things like Braintree and stuff because they've been so bad at redoing their code in-house. That is, you know, I've gone through their back-end adaptive payment systems and their code, some of their tutorials or the explanations are wrong. They're actually incorrect. That's not how you do it. They don't know how the system works. Elon Musk has said, you know, he's actually, there are still bits of his code that he originally wrote back in the 90s that's still in there.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Is the future of Patreon like kind of a mini bank? Like, are they like
moving money around?
Well, and also loans to creators or doing things where you're buying and you're buying certain equipment or something at a certain level.
I think that gets into such to I think that gets into a very problematic area. And I think that what they do best is they make it very easy. Right now, they make it very easy to go here to pay me money, and then you know you will get your content because you'll get emailed, this is the content. You know, they're very good at that delivery for content and fulfilling that promise. So, I mean, what they do with creators in the back end, maybe, but I mean, that gets into such a crazy stray area. But if they say, hey, you know, how do they make their money? They make their money by people going to Patreon and using that as a service to get things from people they love. So they want to get more people from YouTube and other places into Patreon, bringing their fans there. How do we do that? We'll make a better tool for you to do this than YouTube. We'll make a better experience for your fans than YouTube does, which they do already. You know, I love, you know, the patreon.com/magicclub page is a lot easier to look at than my YouTube channel page, which is just garbage. It's just, you know, a billion different committees trying to tell people what they should have here, here, and here. And it's ugly and it doesn't serve my purposes. It doesn't make me money. It doesn't do what I want it to do. So I think that, you know, the value proposition is like, we solved the problem. Tell your fans to go here to subscribe. We'll make better tools for you to create content and better tools distributed.
I think, let me just say this. Their RSS manager, the fact that it is just drag and drop, drag and drop to upload audio to them. It's simple. It is as clean as an interface as you can find, and you can so easily just say this only goes to certain patrons or it's public. Like my Patreon's jumped, I think, like $300 or something in the last like month, and that is all because of that functionality that Patreon built in there.
You can tell because it is a tool made by people that had a problem they were trying to solve. Had a problem they were trying to solve, and how do you, you know, and you look at that and you know, this guy, they knew what I was going through as your creator. What do I need to put stuff? You use other systems like, yeah, go over here, enter this form here. But I'm like, Who designed this? Who do you think is using this?
Well, and you can tell, you know, they went the long way around it, because it's not using RSS with credentials, which you've normally had to do for premium or pay RSS feeds. They are going through and making unique tokens for every user, so that on the user side it's super easy, and on the creator side they don't have to do anything dealing with passwords and logins and stuff. I didn't expect them to do it.
Oh, smarter, and you don't even think about it. You know, and I think that's a thing to think about, is that if you want to create something, look at your own use cases. You know, Mark Zuckerberg, you know, wanted to create a better way to talk to people and interact. Wanted to make money, you know, but he wanted to create he was a guy who was at college using services. He thought they all sucked and thought he could do a better job. So he created a better tool for him. You know, YouTube was initially started by people who were like, man, I just shot some video of this thing. Where do I put it? And like, oh, I can go here and I can pay this much a month for an account, or I could do this or whatever. And the problem was, is YouTube storage and streaming was still ridiculously expensive, but it was, hey, so there was a period in which you could get, you know, it was 2005, whatever, there's VC money back, and that you could get VC money to go fund something and say, hey, can we get a few million dollars to keep this thing running until we scale it? And it kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger and kept losing money, and it may still lose money. But my point was, and when it first started, it was a very easy to use tool, but that was 2006, you know, and now pre-iPhone, pre-everything, and, you know, it's usable, it's easier, but it's not as friendly as, let's say, Patreon is, which says this is what we do. So yeah, they talk about acquisitions and stuff, like, you know, what about Apple buying them or whatever. It's like, you know, anything's possible, but you have to look at like what an intelligent buy is, a company going to their core strength. Amazon is buying Whole Foods because Amazon wants to sell you stuff. And when we've talked about Amazon stores before, it was always the idea of like, oh, are they going to replace Barnes and Noble? Are they going to replace Best Buy or whatever? And I've always been sort of not so much into that idea, because those are extremely inefficient stores. Little kiosk stores, little small stores that show off Amazon wares that just run basically barely break even. That's different. They don't make the revenue. People are like, oh, they're 10 Amazon stores. Like, yeah, what's their revenue per square foot compared to an Apple store? Laughable. But Amazon buying Whole Foods is great because everybody's got to eat. Everybody's got to buy groceries, and they can figure out the efficiencies. And Amazon's like, well, we can tie this into our services, and it's already a profitable business, and grocery stores aren't going away, but we're ahead of the curve of where that could be. Amazon buying, you know, a company like Patreon are starting their own. I put that at highly credible. You know, they bought Twitch because they said, man, if we were the size we were now, we would have bought YouTube.
You know, to read the tea leaves, they bought Twitch right out from under Google by offering them basically freedom to do what they wanted, but all the benefits of what they were going to get from Google, like all the benefits of space and, you know, all the bandwidth and everything. Mm-hmm. They're like, well, you know, we can just run it on. I mean, I think they were already running on AWS. So it's like, just look at that, you know, like you can just keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah, that was and I think a smart move, because the problem with Google is, you know, the Google track record would be, hey, we'll try to do this thing, we'll do this, and like, yeah, now we're going to fold this into YouTube, and now it's going to become part of the whole YouTube thing, and I think it would have sucked.
Well, and also automation, you know, there's still parts of Twitch that are very like human centric and creator centric, and you see YouTube, which has a support system for their highest level creators and channels, but you know, if you're anything less than that, you know, you're kind of you are graced to continue to use it for free. And I don't know that I could see stuff like the amount of partner support that Twitch has right now, or even things like the affiliates, which are basically for anybody, come through outside of an Amazon.
Obviously, I have a biased outlook when it comes to Twitch, but I don't think that it's really arguable that YouTube, Google as a company and YouTube as a subsidiary of Google, they don't like customer service. They don't. They believe that it is a flaw in humanity that they hope to algorithm out.
And we talk about this because you're not their customer.
Yeah.
You know, if you're a watcher, you're somebody's attention to be resold to somewhere else, and that's not a model they really get. And even, you know, and that's when they, and that's that I've always said that when Google said like, oh, or, you know, when they tried to do their movie service and even like YouTube Red, like Google's been the company that gives you things for free, you know, for free. And, you know, when they launched Android, well, it's this free operating system. You got to buy a phone, but we're going to make this freely available, and getting people to buy things. You know, I don't know if it's where it is right now, but for the longest time, you know, the App Store and Apple was still making way more money than the Google Store, even though, you know, when Google, there were more Android users than iPhone users, because, you know, it's just a different relationship between that. And I think that, you know, the Google way is to pull something, you know, name a Google acquisition that retained its identity, you know, and it's hard versus, you know, you can start naming companies, then you go, you know, think Audible. We talk about Audible all the time. Who are we talking about when we talk about Audible?
It's Amazon.
Yeah, it's Amazon. You know, you take Goodreads. Amazon bought the biggest user book review platform there is.
IMDb.
You go to the Goodreads. Yeah, Amazon too. And you go to Goodreads and you will not, on there about Goodreads and all that, they'll talk to you who runs it. They will not tell you it's an Amazon company, but it's an Amazon company. And they've been very, very good at a number of these acquisitions that just, you know, are very, very strategic about this. And, you know, we talk about, you know, AWS, for many people, they're not even aware of the fact of how much stuff just runs off of Amazon services and things, to the point that I started playing on some of the Google services because Google's trying to play catch up there. Like, they've tried to come up with their own competitor with buckets and systems for serving content. And the advantage they have is AWS is, you know, 10 to 12 years old when you look at those interfaces, and the Google stuff is new and is a little bit slicker. But, man, Amazon kind of there.
By the way, for the record, App Annie, which tracks this stuff, is reporting that only this year, 2017, will Android's Google Play Store revenue overtake Apple's. And this is like year what, 6 or 7 of there being far more Androids out in the market than
at least
iOS devices.
At least, yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it's you know, and that's been, you know, for the longest time, you know, it's like you did iPhone first. And that's why you look, Apple is now working really hard to make their user tools and all that even easier to use. They've been doing a lot to try to get people to learn Swift, et cetera. Although I've heard there's now talk about, you know, using Swift to make Android apps. So,
yeah. You know, oh, no, for
open
sure.
Source.
Maybe.
So what a world. Gentlemen, this has been a very interesting discussion. No, it's RIP Apple. Oh, don't even.
No.
Yeah,
I think they're fine. I mean, again, they're actually making money on their phone sales, which is another thing that does not necessarily happen with a lot of the other. I mean, like yeah, Samsung makes it.
The app store is like, yeah, it's a little thing we do on a side thing. And again, they have to innovate and stuff. And I'm not terribly excited about, you know, the HomePod, because I think Alexa won. They made the, you know, Amazon has a platform they can push everywhere because they can say, yeah, we can put this on a $20 device. Apple's never going to do this.
They're never.
Whether or not, you know, you could be like, well, you know, people are like, what about Apple cars and things like that? Maybe not. But when you are Dior, you know, Apple, you have to understand Apple's stock value. Apple's market cap is $763 billion. $763 billion. Now, Google is at, you know, $668 billion is hot on their tail. You know, but when you're a company that's worth almost $1 trillion, you can do things like take over entire sectors like energy sectors or computation or things like that. So, you know, you can spend billions of dollars exploring things like self-driving cars or automation. The most profitable areas of the future, we don't even know what they are yet.
Yeah.
No. So. Well, yeah, nobody cry for Cupertino. I think they're going to be, going to be just fine. Yeah.
They can afford to make a lot of mistakes. So can Google. You know, Google was betting everything on Google Plus. That was the mantra inside Google, was Google Plus or this is our live or die. Cause they're like, you know, we're going to face this problem. Facebook, if we don't do this, then we're going to lose and we got to do it. And then it's like Google Plus, like, yeah, you know, that was sort of the thing.
All right, guys, I got to let you go here, but I love you.
We got to go. Goodbye. It's been after.
Bye-bye. Bye.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.